Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan, and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now, because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting EXIT PLAN with no spaces to 44222. That's EXIT PLAN to 44222. Again, text EXIT PLAN to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. Pleasure to have you with me. You know, we talk about a wide variety of topics here at Exit Coach Radio, but mainly geared toward those of you who are thinking about your future, about the next 3 to 5, maybe 10 years when you can exit from your existing business. And then you're going to figure out what else you want to do with your life. And a lot of people, believe it or not, start a new business after they try, you know, playing golf for a little while or realize that, you know, staying home isn't all it's cracked up to be. And maybe, of course, these days travel is difficult. And oftentimes they turn to a franchise operation. And the reason I hear about that is that, well, when I started my business many, many years ago, I had an idea for solving a particular niche. And, you know, I didn't see a franchise out there. I didn't see a pre-established type of business I could buy into. So I started it on my own and I built it up. But nowadays, there are hundreds, thousands of franchises out there. So my first guest is going to talk to us about that. Kim Daly is a franchise expert, a business coach, and a motivational speaker. And her goal is to inspire people to achieve their dreams of small business ownership through the perfect franchise opportunity. Kim, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Bill. It's such a pleasure. What a great introduction. Thank you.
Well, Kim, this is something that I think is on a lot of our listeners' minds. Again, our listeners being baby boomers who are thinking, you know, if I was to start my business again, what would I want? I'd want an established marketing plan. I'd want, you know, I'd want to be able to buy into the brain trust that maybe created another business. So it's a huge topic, I think, these days. Tell us a little bit about you and your background before we get into it, because I know you do a lot more than franchising with your coaching and speaking and that type of thing. Tell us about that.
Yes, Bill. Well, I definitely want to get back to that question, because that's exactly why people turn to franchising, is so they don't have to recreate the wheel. I work with many entrepreneurs who then say, listen, I know how hard it is to start something from scratch, and this time around, I don't want to spend all that time and money. I want to just buy into something. It's worth paying a franchise fee to be given that ready-made toolbox, and off I go, and to be able to scale a business significantly faster for that next run at being a business owner. So we'll come back to that. But yes, I am a franchise consultant. I help people understand what franchising is, what it isn't. I coach them through a process that helps them select the right franchise, the right one being more based on what they want to wake up and do every day as a business owner, rather than the widget that they think they want to sell, right? Because when you're a business owner, sometimes it doesn't really matter, like, what the widget is, so long as you're proud to say or represent that widget. But what more matters is, you know, if you love building teams and managing people, that you get to go to work every day and build teams and manage people, right? Or if you're a salesperson and you like influencing others, you want to be out in the field selling and influencing. So we match using a process that matches characteristics that people are looking for, and then I bring those franchisors to that model that we've built. And I coach people through a process. It takes about 1 to 2 months to select the right business for most people. I help them with the financing aspect. I help them go through the legal documentation, not as an attorney, but understanding high level, you know, the legal relationship between a franchisee and a franchisor. And basically my job, Bill, is to help people be competent in their due diligence so they can be confident in their final decision, whether it's yes or no. And I do it all
Excellent.
For free.
That's pretty good. That's a really good price. might want to think about that.
I always tell people, look, remember, this is free for you. That doesn't mean it's cheap. It means it's priceless. Right?
Excellent.
I get paid like a recruiter by the franchisors. So the franchisors come to me and they want someone to like do the dirty work. They want someone to pre-screen these people, make sure they're financially qualified, make sure they live in a market that they have open, and really make sure that the candidate has the right skill set and mindset for that particular business. So by the time my candidates get to that franchisor's desk, all of those boxes are already checked, and the level of conversation that they can enter into is just much higher.
Yeah, I'm sure they want to eliminate the whim buyers, the people that I call it the whim buyers, the people that maybe read a magazine article or talk to somebody or, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I think I'll do that without any real research. So I'm sure that's successful for the franchisors as well. Let's talk about why franchising is a good investment, even in an uncertain economy like we're facing today.
It's such a great question. So, you know, if we're all here on the phone, we're all business owners, and we want to control our destiny. Like, the only way to do that is by owning businesses, right? So I work with people that are investors, that are looking for tax advantages of certain businesses, that are looking to offset other income from maybe they're a high W-2 earner as a surgeon or a dentist, right? I work with all kinds of people. I also work with just people that have worked in corporate America their entire life, and they've been laid off because of the economy. And so now they're not ready to retire, and they're looking for the next hurrah. But they're like, well, why would I go back and build somebody else's dream or do this again and maybe get laid off again in another 3 or 5 years? I want the control and the stability and the freedom that a business would provide. But I don't have a great idea. I've never started a business before. I've never owned a business. So I need the mentorship and support of a franchise. So really, when you step back and you look at what are you actually getting when you invest in a franchise, what you're really buying, Bill, is leadership. You're buying a relationship. So I'm coaching my people to be focused on the people and the toolbox that they've created and a belief that these people have an exciting vision for their future, and they've created tools to help them, their franchisees, accomplish building this brand over a certain amount of time. And you buy into that vision and understand how these tools can help you get up that learning curve faster, and you raise your hand, say, yes, pick me to take your brand to my hometown and go build it. So we have proven plans and processes, and then we need people that can wake up and execute those proven plans and processes.
Excellent. You know, this next question is really important for our listeners who are selling a business as well. So from the standpoint of, we tell people a lot of times, you know, you need to create a franchise-like buying opportunity for your buyers, even if you're just a single location, because that's your competition. So let's talk a little bit about what the real value proposition of a franchise is. Why is it, you know, what goes into the kind of the process book, if you will, the advertising, the marketing plans, all that kind of stuff? What are buyers really looking for, and what's their value proposition?
Yep, I love that question, and relating it to selling a business. So I always begin with my candidates with the end in mind. The very first question I want to know is, what is your vision for your future, and how long do you want to own this business? Because if someone says, I want to build a business that will last me 10 years, that's a different investment than someone that says, I want to ramp 5 locations over the next 5 years and then position this to sell. So one of the greatest advantages of a franchise is the potential to scale it fast. Because when you're an entrepreneur and you have to stop and create all of the stuff that makes the business run efficiently, it could take you, I mean, you guys know more than I, 3 to 5 years or so to like get one location or to get your business like to feeling like it's stable and growing. Well, I can take a franchisee with the right franchise systems and brand who can own 5 locations in 5 years. So it's what you're buying in a franchise is the infrastructure, the marketing, the proven marketing, the technology, the proven business plan that enables you to hit the ground running from day one and be able to scale your business significantly faster, because the wealth is going to be created through that scale. Now, also, most entrepreneurs work in their business. Franchisees work on their business. And that's why they can scale to multiple locations faster, because no one location needs the owner in order for it to go. So, for example, if you've ever heard of Massage Envy, right? I can have an owner or a Planet Fitness, right, that owns 5 or 10 Massage Envies, but they're not working in any one of them. Right, they hire somebody to sit behind the desk, and they hire massage therapists. So they're the CEO of a multiple store opportunity, right? And they're managing staff, they're managing the strategy, they're managing the future growth, they're managing financials. They're working on it, not in it. So when we come back to that exit strategy, what you've created when you come into a market, let's say you're a first to market in a pioneering brand, and you get to carve out the best demographics for 3 or 5 locations, and you build those over, you know, 3-5 years, and now they're up and running, and now maybe at the 8-year mark, the brand has kind of woke up and everybody wants one. We saw this happen with Orange Theory Fitness, right? The whole world woke up and everybody wanted. Every member at Orange Theory said, I want to own one of these. But like, they were already sold out. So that is when there's an amazing exit strategy for those pioneering franchisees to say, well, there's no more territory, but I mean, I own 5 of them and they're all up and running. And so if you want to buy me out, you can pay me a 5 multiple of what I built and I'll go away. That's just supply and
That's
demand,
great.
Right? I saw big exit strategies from some of those bigger the brands that became big brands like Planet Fitness and Massage Envy. And those businesses won't necessarily hold on to that multiple. It's just where they were in the trend, right, that created that opportunity for exit. So coming back to the original question, when I first start with candidates, it's what is your vision? How long do you want to be involved with this? Because I want you to consider selling it, because that resale value is part of the full ROI of what you've built.
Now, you've mentioned a few, you know, large brand names. I think everybody knows those brand names out there. If you don't, you know, why not? But I have attended Franchise Expo at the Anaheim Convention Center, you know, a couple years ago, and we still did those kind of things. And it was huge. It was massive. It was the entire convention floor, plus it overflowed into others. There were franchises representing everything that you can imagine. Like I said, probably in the numbers of more than hundreds, probably close to, you know, in the thousands. So how does someone figure out, how do you do this, Kim? How do you figure out the best investment for someone's goals, finances, and dreams? Because I had no idea that there were that many franchise opportunities out there.
That's so great. It's like a setup, Bill. Come on. I paid you to say to ask that question. Well, that's why I have a business. So I spent 18 years building relationships.
I work for free too, Kim.
Yeah, exactly. I spent 18 years building relationships in this industry, right? So that's why you use someone like me who can say, like, these are my friends. Like, I know these people don't oversell their franchise. I've placed people into this business and I've seen them go on to become millionaires in their business. So that's why people use me, because you're getting a referral, if you will, into a solid franchise organization that I've had a relationship with. Because you're right, it's a daunting task to think about, where do I even begin? And if you're using Entrepreneurs Top 500, or, you know, that's going to be based on system-wide sales, and that's one indication of how happy franchisees are, is if they're making money, but it's not the only indication, right? So when someone like me, who has their pulse on the inside of hundreds of companies, I'm giving like a referral, but I also just don't bring my candidates one company. It's like, you don't have to take my word for it. I'm going to bring you back 3 to 5 options that match this model that we've built, and then I'm going to teach you how to do proper due diligence so you can decide for yourself who is the right partner, right? So it's up to the candidate to say, you know, this partner, this kind of investor may like, you know, a billion-dollar franchisor like Regis that owns Supercuts. And then for somebody who's very entrepreneurial, a billion-dollar company backing them could feel like they're just going back into corporate America that they just left. So on the one hand,
right.
this investor makes that makes them feel safe to have the Titanic behind them. And on the other hand, this investor that's more entrepreneurial says that feels like suffocation. I want to be – I'd rather be one of the first 10 franchisees. So I am gathering, again, going through a very specific process that gathers all this data, and I have years of history in this industry and relationships that my candidates get to leverage.
Could you address how many franchises do you think there are out there in very round numbers?
I usually the number 3,000 to 4,000 gets thrown out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually like a franchisee of a company called FranChoice. So I pay royalties. I get supported by a corporate. It makes people laugh, right? You're a franchisee of a company that helps other people buy franchises? Why, yes. Because why do it alone? It's the having support. It's having training. And my franchisor in Minneapolis, it's their job to actually go to all of those shows and find the franchisors that want help growing their brands and bringing them into my inventory. And we get trained on new franchises every week. We have new training calls. And then we sell out brands, and so they go out of our inventory. So my inventory is very dynamic. Finding the right franchise is not the hard part for me. For me, it's finding the candidate that has real clear goals about what they want to use this business for. Once I have a candidate that is very clear about what they want to achieve through the business, it's easy for me then to pick the vehicle because I have enough experience. I know how to do that.
I think one question our listeners might be thinking of is, you know, I live in a certain part of the country. Can you help me find those franchises who are not quite in prime time in my area, but they're on fire in other areas of the country? In other words, what are those real opportunities? How can I get into that franchise that's going to take that's being received very well, let's say in the Midwest, and it's heading to California, but it's not quite there yet?
Oh yes, absolutely. I love pioneering brands. That's like I believe that the first to market advantage is one of the greatest advantages you can have, but it has to go with the right investor mindset. But absolutely, I have no restriction in territory because it's not my job to decide if the territory is the right one. It's between the candidate and the franchisor. So once I have a candidate who I believe fits a certain profile that makes them a fit for a certain franchise, and I do the territory check, the franchisor is doing a high level, like, yes, demographically that territory meets our minimums, send the candidate over. And then the franchisor and the candidate work together during that 4 to 6 week due diligence process to really look at the market and understand the opportunity in that market and to come to the conclusion mutually that that candidate is a good fit and that market is viable.
What do you think the trend is as you look into the future with Amazon and things like COVID and things like that probably dissuading people from having certain types of franchises, but the two you mentioned are, you know, health and fitness and wellness, Orange Theory and Massage Envy you mentioned earlier. Are they service oriented? What do you see in your crystal ball?
Yep. You know what? This year has been so great. So years ago, one of the first mentors I had in franchising told me, Kim, in good times and bad, franchising wins. So people always invest in franchises. In good times, people want more of the American dream, and they're buying those sexy, fun businesses, the ones I just mentioned, right? But in bad times, people get laid off, they're in transition, they fear they can't find another job getting paid what they're worth, or they don't want to go back and end up getting laid off again. So they create an opportunity by buying a franchise. But what they buy at that time may be more needs-based businesses, right? But either way, franchising wins. Now, this year, I've seen that. So we're finishing up the year. I'm one of the top consultants in the country. I am right on track with where I was last year with the number of people and the opportunities I've created, which is unbelievable to me in a pandemic. But it speaks to this fact. But what people bought this year were like laundromats and cleaning companies, and the range of companies I was working with this year did change. Junk removal, it's huge right now. Everybody's home, I guess, cleaning out their closets and their garages. So every business that I'm bringing, but yesterday I just did a fitness deal up in Montana. You know, so I work with one of the largest fitness franchisors in the world, and during the shutdown, when all of their clubs, they own 8 major brands under their corporate umbrella, so across all 8 of their brands, they added 25,000 new memberships system-wide. All of their clubs were closed. You know why?
Wow.
Because they have a virtual platform that's like Peloton. So when the mom and pop gym goers had no place to go, they were looking for a virtual workout. So when I say you're buying leadership, this is what I mean. This franchisor says we are better because of the shutdown, because we attracted people that we might have never attracted, and they believe they'll hold on to a certain percentage of those people. I mean, is that the most abundant thinking you've ever heard? So I'm telling my candidates, that's what we're looking for. It doesn't matter whether you're selling, you know, dog walking or changing oil or cutting hair. It doesn't matter. So long as you relate and see the opportunity in that space. What matters in the franchise is who are the people that are behind this brand and what is their vision for the future and how financially backed are they to keep adapting and growing. So every franchise that I'm showing this year has an amazing story of adaptation during COVID. Otherwise, why would I show it, right? I mean, if a candidate's going to go out there and the franchisor's got their head in the sand, and more importantly, the franchisees that have already invested in this company are like scared out of their minds. I mean, that's not going to go anywhere. And fortunately for me, in like my inventory at Franchoice, we have very, very few companies that are like that. I mean, that speaks to what Franchoice does for me in terms of creating and finding those franchises that are backed by incredible leaders that really have the opportunity, a business opportunity to deliver to people in good times and bad. So even the things that we would assume may not work this year, I tell my candidates, don't make that assumption. Keep an open mind. Because when you get to where you can start interviewing franchise owners, that's part of what we do. It's called validation, where you get to validate the business model through the eyes and mouth of somebody who's already jumped off the diving board.
Jim, great information. Talk about great stories, but we have to run on. Unfortunately, today it's been terrific, a real shot in the arm, so to speak. And your service is free. Again, you can check out Kim's website, TheDaily, D-A-L-Y, Coach, TheDaily, D-A-L-Y, Coach.com. Learn more about her and what she does. And again, get in touch with her. It would be a fantastic idea for anybody who's considering franchising to first get in touch with Kim Daly. Kim, you've been terrific, and I really enjoyed having you on. I'd love to have you on at some point in the future and catch up with you, see how things are going maybe in 2021.
It's a cliffhanger. We'll pick up right where we left off, Bill. Thank you so much. God bless you. Happy holidays.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone for listening. Real pleasure to have you with us today. And my next guest has an interesting story as well. In the noisy digital world, you can't break through the noise. You just add to it. Instead, you need to get in on the conversation where your ideal customers are already listening. As a Navy veteran who ran nuclear power plants and an inbound marketing engineer, Tom Schwab, my next guest, has a refreshingly unique approach. He focuses on time-proven strategies, then supercharges it with today's technology and podcast interview marketing. He's an author, a speaker, and a teacher, and Tom helps you get more traffic, leads, and raving customer fans by being interviewed on targeted podcasts. Tom, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Bill, I am thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's very interesting that you've taken charge of this fairly new technology and really created a platform for people to do it professionally, to be guests. I've had the pleasure of having numerous interview valet guests on the show, and it's been a terrific experience every single time. So tell us a little bit more about you and your background.
Yeah, and I think what we do here is not revolutionary, it's evolutionary, you know, leveraging other people's platforms to get your message out there. And so my background, I'm an engineer by degree. Like you said, my first job out of college was running nuclear power plants. And people say, wow, that's amazing. I'm like, no, what's amazing is that people much smarter figured out the systems, the process, the culture to make that work. And really, that's what we're doing at Interview Valet. So, you know, I believe today everybody's biggest problem is obscurity, right? Today there are thousands, tens of thousands of people you could help if they just knew about you. And, you know, the best way to get people to find out about you is not breaking through the noise, because honestly, we're all probably adding to the noise, but to get introduced by somebody they already know, like, and trust. And today, one of the easiest ways to do that is on podcast interviews. I mean, even today with COVID and travel restrictions, you can still get right into people's ears by talking on podcasts.
Right. And Tom, podcasts have been around for what, maybe 10 years, and they kind of had an initial surge and then they kind of got quiet. Of course, with COVID, things have gone through the roof again. How did you come up with the idea for Interview Valet?
Well, I always say it's an evolution of what I was doing. So my background is in inbound marketing, using content to attract, engage, and delight customers. And, you know, a dozen years ago, 15 years ago, the best hack for that was guest blogging. So instead of me writing a blog and putting it on my own site and having, you know, three people read it, you know, one of them being my mom, to put it on a guest blog, right? So put it out on Wall Street Journal, Fortune, wherever your ideal customers are, you know, get that know, like, and trust. So back in 2014, I hypothesized that you could use podcast interviews that same way. And one of the things that I looked at was that, you know, I've written a lot of blogs in my life, but Bill, every one of them felt like a homework assignment. I'm not a natural writer, but I love to talk. And so for me, it was very easy. And so we started to test it in 2014. And I was really amazed when I saw the conversion rates were like 25 times better than blogs. At first I thought, well, it's, you know, it's a niche, it's a personality. And the more we tested it, the more it actually worked out. And really, you know, if somebody hears you for 20, 30 minutes, you know, if they come back to your website, they come back as an engaged lead. It's not just a tire kicker or somebody that clicked on an ad on Facebook.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, one of the pioneers, I guess, and one of the most successful podcasters is a guy named John Lee Dumas. And he was on my show a couple years ago, a great guy. And he said that, you know, we're entering the age of the specialized podcast, where if you knitted left-handed with blue thread, you could find a podcast out there that is probably by someone who could, who, you know, you'd have an audience. So how do you find, how do our listeners find and get booked on podcasts that matter to their business? Because there's, like we talked about earlier with franchises, in podcasts, there's a ton of people that are doing podcasts in all varieties of topics these days.
You're right. And right now there's 1.7 million podcasts. Now, of only 700,000 of them have been active in the last 30 days. But the problem is not finding the podcast, it's finding the right one. And just like you said, Bill, bigger is not better. Better is better. And I always use the example of somebody a couple of years ago pointed out to me, there's a game out there called Pickleball, right? I wasn't familiar with it at the time, but I looked it up. At that time, there were a dozen podcasts focused on pickleball. You know, if you're the best pickleball coach out there or have the best equipment, that's where you want to go for your ideal audience. And there's a lot of search engines out there now. You could just put, you know, whatever your topic is and put podcast in there. You can go into iTunes and put that keyword in there. Another great thing to do is to ask your clients, hey, what kind of podcast do you like? Which ones do you listen to? Often they're the best market research you can have. And often people, you know, talk about the biggest one, right? But there's all kinds of niche ones for your industry, for your associations. So really you can start on rabbit holes just going to a Google search and putting that in there. And there's other search engines out there that you'll soon find. You know, iTunes has one, Chartable has one. If you just start searching those, you'll find those.
And one of the unique things I found is that when I get approached by interview valet for a guest, it's presented in a certain way. It's like, you know, we've vetted this guest. We think that they're right for your demographics, your audience. And the other cool thing is it always comes with a very nice one-page overview that talks about what, you know, what we're going to talk about and how to introduce the guest and all that type of stuff. So I'm giving a little plug here, Tom, but how do our listeners become an ideal guest and, again, predictably turn listeners into leads?
And Bill, you hit on it right there. You said when you introduce a guest, I loathe the word pitch, and that's what so many people are doing. To me, it's dehumanizing. You pitch a baseball, you introduce a human being. So with that, Gary Vaynerchuk talks about jab, 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 right hook. I might have missed a couple jabs in there. I look at it as serve, 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 ask. So when you find a podcast and you're like, wow, I'd love to be a guest on this. Well, first thing to do is leave it a rating and review. Podcasters, we're all vain. We listen for our own name. If you leave a rating and review, that podcast host will know who you are. Share the content on social media. Make some comments on it. After you've served, then you've got the opportunity to reach out to them. And with that, to say, hey, I've listened to the podcast. I enjoyed this guest, and I think I've got some value that I could offer to your audience. Once again, serving. And when you do that, you're going to find that the podcast host asks you to be on. The other thing is the word guest. Think of it as being invited to somebody's home as a guest at a dinner party. They're going to introduce you to all their friends. So make sure that you show up on time, sounding great, prepared. Be a gracious guest, not just to come in for a transaction. And then ultimately, you know, to move people from being a passive listener to an active visitor to an engaged lead, well, give them something of value that makes them want to go to your website. You know, I wrote a book. I give more of those away than I sell, and I'm happy to give those away because it adds value there. Make it easy for people to come back to your website and find you and connect with you. I always am amazed sometimes when I'm out there jogging at half-x speed as I listen to a podcast at 2x speed when people are on and they start to give, well, you can get me on email here and Facebook here and LinkedIn there. I'm like, they don't understand. I'm running, I'm driving, I'm multitasking. The chances of me even remembering one of those is slim. So give me one place to go. Make it easy for me.
That's a great tip, and I think that also leads into a couple more questions I have for you. Number one, let's talk about who's listening to podcasts. Now, we think of you just mentioned one key time when people listen, and that's when they're jogging. And of course, they're not going to watch a video when they're jogging, or they're not going to be jogging very long. Number two is when they're driving, and we've seen the advent of Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and some of these other technologies coming into new vehicles that give people more choices. As a matter of fact, I remember hearing a couple years ago that they were going to do away with AM radio because it was all streaming anymore anyways on new cars. I don't think that actually happened, but let's talk about that. Who listens to podcasts?
Well, if you look at the studies, Bill, it says that the average podcast listener is above average education and above average income. They're also, the numbers say that they're probably past college age. Before that, it's a lot of video. But these are people that are interested in new ideas, right? There's always those people that are proud that, you know, they've never listened or never read a book since they graduated high school. They're the ones that are still listening to 80s rock and roll. And I do that at times. But most of the time, I want to learn something new. I want to be always learning and ahead of the pack. So what you see is a lot of times they're early adopters or those people that are really looking for answers. The other thing that I think is interesting is that word podcast. I think we're recording this now in 2020. I think somebody's going to listen to this in 2030 And every time we say podcast, they may laugh, right? Because in 1920, radio was called wireless telegraph. And by 1930, it was radio. And really today, it's interesting because we're recording a podcast here. But what if somebody read the transcript? Would that still be a podcast? Or what if there was a clip of it that got put up on social media? Would that still be a podcast? You know, some podcasters are including the video and they'll put it up on YouTube. So the question is it a podcast? I don't know, as long as people get the content. And I think that's one of the great things today, that it's so easy for us to create in the way that's easiest for us and then repurpose it in the way that's easiest for other people.
So let's talk about, now you're the author of Podcast Guest Profits. That's the book you were mentioning, Grow Your Business with a Targeted Interview Strategy. How about for the business owners that are listening to this typically that are saying, you know, I just don't know that I have anything great to say, or I just don't know why anybody would want to listen to me?
Well, first I would just want to say, I don't want to be pitching my book. If anybody wants a free copy of it, I'm more than happy to give it to you. Just go to interviewvalet.com/exit coach and you can get a free copy right there. But you're right in that most people underestimate what they know. And one of the phrases that really struck me, and I learned this in the Navy, is what's ordinary to you is amazing to others. Right, we all know something different. And a friend of mine helped me with this. He's actually a lawyer. And he said, if you look at the legal definition of what an expert is, it's someone that knows something by their education, their degree, their training, or their experience that makes them more knowledgeable than the average person. So sometimes that expert is the PhD, right? That person that's got all kinds of letters behind their name. And, you know, Bill, that actually, those people don't work really well on podcast interviews because it can be intimidating. They sound more like college professors. The next type of expert, I call them like the old sage, right? The person that's been doing it for 20 or 30 years, knows everything, can talk about it, and they do well on podcast interviews. But often people look at them and go, well, that's examples from 20 years ago. That's not the way it is today. Often the person that does the best is the traveler, right? It's that person that is one step ahead of you, that knows what you're going through, that knows the problems you've had. One of my favorite examples is there's a gentleman called Nick Pavlidis. He wrote a book called Confessions of a Terrible Husband, Lessons Learned from a Lumpy Couch. And, you know, he's just a husband and a father. He's going through it also, and you can relate to that. But as a business owner, you think about it, you live your business day in and day out. You love to speak about it. You love to share what you have learned. And you know so many things about your industry. And, you know, I call myself the CEO of Interview Valet. And to me, CEO stands for Chief Evangelist Officer. I want to evangelize the company. I want to evangelize our clients. I want to evangelize this entire category that we're in. And, you know, if you ever meet a business owner, even if they're an introvert, they love to talk about their business and their industry. That's their passion. That's why we're here.
It sure is interesting to hear your viewpoints on this, Tom. I want our listeners to get a sense for what would happen if they decide, you know, maybe I'll check that out, and they get in touch with Interview Valet. What happens there? What's the process?
Well, sure. And, well, first of all, you know, we've got an assessment. It's 10 questions that you can answer, and it will give you a score that says, predict to you how well this will work for you. And there's also some hints on how to improve your results with it. Like I said, we've also got the book. If you want to do it yourself, what we do is not magic. It's not a secret. It's just we do it with excellence. It's all we do. We've got a team of 18 that this is all we focus on. Or if somebody says, you know, I'd like to have a discovery call, and let's talk about this strategy. Let's talk about how I could use it in my business, or how maybe you could work with Interview Valet. Then we jump on a call. It's just a 30-minute call. We'll learn a little bit about your business. We'll tell you straight up, you know, this is how we think this would work for you. We'll give you any suggestions on how you could improve your results. And if you want to, we can talk about, you know, how we could help you with that also. Our goal is always to get our clients the maximum return on investment of their money and their time. You know, one of our early clients said, I like working with you because Sinatra only sang. I said, well, what's that mean? And he's like, well, Sinatra was a hardworking guy, a smart guy, but he realized that the best use of his time was performing. And so that's really what we do. And we let our clients be the guest, and then we take care of all the rest.
I sure do appreciate you coming on. You know, I will, again, a big shout out to your team at Interview Valet. Tremendously friendly folks, very professional. As being on the receiving end, as someone who does podcasts, it's great I know the quality. It's that the people are coming at me when Interview Valet gets in touch with me. So I really appreciate that. Again, you can go to interviewvalet.com/exitcoach. They've set up a special page with some resources for you, our listeners. And again, Tom, it's really great to have you on the show, and I really appreciate the service that you're providing. And I wish you the best of luck. I think it's terrific, and I hope you'll come back and update us in a few months or so. Let us know how it's going there at Interview Valet.
I would love that, Bill, and I just want to thank you for all you do. You know, anybody that says doing a podcast is easy has either never done it or never done it well. It's the great ones that just make it look easy. And so I'm gonna ask for something for listeners. You know, if you enjoy this, go and leave a rating and review. It's how other people find this podcast, and you've been blessed by it, and try blessing other people by leaving a rating and review.
Very kind of you, Tom. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. We always have a wide variety of guests here, Exit Coach Radio, as we have this morning. And my next guest is a friend of mine, someone that I've known through a group called Provisors. And she is the founder and president of Solution Harbor, Inc. Amanda Scott, she's been recruiting since 2002 and places management to executive-level employees with their clients in California and nationally. Amanda is an experienced entrepreneur, having successfully started two companies, including Solution Harbor, Inc., which has been in business since 2010, and she has a proven method and makes long-lasting placements. She never has to utilize her replacement guarantee in her 18-year career. And Amanda and her firm place management and executive-level employees in operations, human resources, and finance. She has a BA degree from SDSU in philosophy and is a daily meditator and practices yoga several times a week. And she believes strongly in bringing her yogic principles of mindfulness into her business and strives to do what is right for her clients and her candidates. Recruiting is deeply personal and important process for any business as well as employees. And Amanda really cares about the human aspects of a profession. Now, I read that. Let me tell you the real truth. I'm in situations often where Amanda Scott and I are in the same meeting and people give her tremendous kudos and compliments for the way she does her business. So Amanda, with that, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill. What a great compliment and great way to start the show.
My pleasure. We've had the good fortune of being in this group, Provisors, which really means that we have hundreds and hundreds of top advisors at our fingertips, and that makes you a great resource out there. Tell us a little bit more about how you started Solution Harbor and how you help folks there.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So my entire career has been in recruiting, and I've had the opportunity to work for a large national firm. I worked for a couple of boutique specialty firms, and I pretty quickly realized that I love the profession of recruiting, but I don't like the recruiting industry. I don't think that recruiters are bad people, but I think the way the industry is structured, it's so focused on closing deals that the recruiters forget the deals, the quote deals we are closing, directly affect people's livelihood. We're talking about business owners hiring employees and employees changing jobs. Those are two very stressful, significant things. And so 10 years ago, I started Solution Harbor. I said, enough, we're doing things the right way. I would much rather do less work and have it be the right work. So I'm very particular about the companies I choose to represent. I'm extremely picky about the candidates that I choose to represent. And, you know, we just celebrated 10 years in business, and we're just jamming and really enjoying what we're doing.
Well, congratulations on that. What are some of the misconceptions about hiring with all the unemployment that we're hearing about these days?
So, you know, you see all this unemployment news, and it's terrible. And, of course, we feel badly for the people that are being affected by that. But you see that, and you think, wow, so much unemployment. It must be easy to recruit people right now. Well, as you mentioned in my introduction, I focus on high-level managers, VPs, C-level employees. Those folks are still employed. And so it's exceedingly difficult to recruit those people now because not only are they employed, but they're afraid. We have a lot of uncertainty in the world. And if they have a decent job where they know how their employer has handled the pandemic, they know how their employer has handled anti-discrimination and inclusion, they tend to want to stay put. And so you really have to seek out those passive A players that are currently working and inspire them to consider your opportunity. So whether you're, you know, an employer and you're doing that type of work yourself, or you're working with an executive recruiter to go out and kind of seek out the best possible talent, there's a lot of work in getting that candidate to even consider an opportunity. So just because there's high unemployment doesn't mean the type of people that you need to hire to manage your company are unemployed. So
okay,
that's
a big tip for these days. And how can employers, on the other side, overcome candidates' fear in the hiring process regarding the pandemic and general uncertainty? Because certainly I would think, I'd be concerned about, well, you made it through phase one, but are you going to make it through phase two in the future?
Sure. Yeah, so part of our process at Solution Harbor when we work with a new client is to really help them lay the groundwork for the search. So we, you know, companies often will come to us with a list of tasks they want completed rather than what are we trying to accomplish by hiring this person. So we really look at it from an accomplishment-based standpoint. We also help them figure out what are you looking for in a personality. And then we help them craft a message, a sales message. So pointing out all of the great things about your company, and today pointing out all the things that you've done to handle these difficult situations we're facing. So, you know, fight it before it even has an opportunity to be a concern. In any opening, you know, email, LinkedIn message, voicemail, however you first contact the candidate, I would say something about it. You know, I always think address the elephant in the room. Don't just leave it sitting there. So be prepared to answer questions about those things.
So have, you know, be ready for those questions that might come up, and just don't ignore it, right? Because who knows what?
Don't ignore it, exactly.
There's been a lot of trend towards remote workers, and I guess a two-part question here is, tell us more about what you're seeing with that trend, and number two, how does an employer know if an employee is going to be a good remote worker? Because I think there's a lot of concern about that. What are some of the ways that they can discern that?
Sure. So let me answer that first. You know, it's a hard question, and there's no real easy answer on how to discern if someone's going to be a good remote worker. If they've been a remote worker before and they have good references, well, you know, that's a good answer. I think if they've never worked remotely before, I think you really need to ask them, are you sure that you're going to be comfortable working remotely? Do you have space in your home to work remotely? Do you have interruptions? You know, really drill into them about whether or not they're comfortable and set up for success to be working remotely. If they've never done it before, when you talk to their references, I would say, you know, we're considering candidate Tom to work remotely for our company. You know, do you feel that Tom has the self-discipline to work remotely? So you could ask questions of the reference. As far as some new trends, so, you know, it can be scary to have remote workers if you haven't done it before, although I think so many people have been working remotely and it's been successful that companies are really reconsidering that. And the benefit of reconsidering that is if you have people working remotely, you've now opened up your pool of potential candidates. So we have a client in Orange County that hired two candidates through us last year. They had to be in Orange County, California. Well, then the company worked remotely for months because of the pandemic, and they needed to hire two more people this year. And so it was very exciting because instead of being limited to recruiting out of Southern California, we could recruit nationally. We ended up hiring someone in Illinois and someone in Maine who are both working remotely. We were able to find the best in the country, not just the best in Southern California. So I really urge employers to consider, you know, if it's possible for their company to have a remote workforce or, you know, some workers to be remote, you really can tap into a whole nation of potential candidates and find the best of the best, which is awesome.
Yeah, and that brings up another question, and that is that I know that, you know, you're on the recruiting side of things, but are you seeing some guidelines or best practices in companies that are hiring across time zones for, you know, if someone's in Maine and the company's in California, you just cut out a big part of the workday that there's going to be some, you're going to be expecting work, but you're not going to necessarily be monitoring it if you run an 8-hour day, for instance. Do you know what I mean? So
I think you need to be flexible within reason. So if your business is wholly, you know, done in an 8-to-5 Pacific time schedule, then when you approach a potential candidate, you need to tell them the hours are 8-to-5 Pacific time. So even though you're on the East Coast, that would be our hours. With the company I just mentioned, the CEO gave them each an hour of wiggle room so that they could adjust somewhat. You know, he still wanted them to work mostly the same schedule as the West Coast counterparts. So I think you need to be flexible within reason. And if you can't be flexible, you just need to make sure that that's cleared with the potential candidate before you move past the first stage of an interview process.
So if you're in California, you might want to ask that main candidate, are you an early riser?
Yeah, that would be a great question.
Right. and it goes the other way, too.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please, sorry. Sorry to step on you there.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, it's not just about being an early riser, because some people are early risers but have a whole process they do in the morning before they start their work day. You know, you can also ask, like, when do you function the best? When do you feel like you do your best work? Those kinds of questions, I think, would be important, too.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, and it seems like, you know, with the COVID situation, and we're hearing this, especially in Northern California, very expensive place to live. A lot of people are saying, well, it looks like I'm going to be virtual forever. I'm moving to Montana, let's just say. And so is this a trend where we're going to, for instance, figure out where are some of the best and brightest people moving to as far as a trend is concerned? Maybe it's Arizona, maybe it's Montana, maybe it's somewhere else. And then focusing our recruiting efforts maybe geographically, because we know that a lot of good people are moving to that area.
You know, I hadn't really thought about it that way. The way that I think about target recruits is to figure out, and again, now we can do this nationally, not just locally, but figure out nationally. So we work across all different industries, but we love working in consumer packaged goods, food and beverage, food production, you know, anything revolving around those types of companies are really where we get excited. And so say you're a cosmetics manufacturer and your revenue is $25 million, you've got, you know, 40 employees. Rather than looking geographically, I would look at what other similar cosmetics manufacturers are there in the country, come up with a list of 10 or 20, and then figure out who, you know, if you're looking for a VP of operations, for example, figure out who's managing operations at those 20 cosmetic companies and target those folks directly. So I understand your points about, you know, I guess if a company was considering having like a secondary location, if they wanted to figure out where the A players from that industry were moving, that might be a good idea. But in general, I think it's more about targeting the right kind of company versus the location.
Makes sense. And so that's if you're representing more the employee, I would guess, right, at what you just described. If you're representing the employer, then that person they're looking for could be anywhere. And you focus on typically the C-suite, the CFO and the COO, VP of sales, the higher-ups in the company with your practice, right?
Yeah, so we really do everything that's non-technical. We don't work on anything technical. So we're really operational focused. So, you know, this year we've placed a handful of operations management professionals. We placed last year I placed a couple of VP of HR. So anything that's kind of high-level manager to C-level in those areas.
So again, with the trend towards remote, if you're placing a COO, is it a plus, obviously, for them to demonstrate that they can manage a remote workforce these days? Is that something that you find as a strong asset to lead with on with someone?
So I have to tell you, I'm not sure that a COO or a VP of operations could effectively completely work remotely. I think it would, you know, especially if it was some kind of a product-based company and there was any manufacturing or distribution involved, I think it would be exceedingly difficult to manage that remotely. So I don't think all jobs can be remote. Now, could a CFO do their job remotely? Sure. You know, could an HR person do their job remotely? I think mostly. So, you know, again, it really depends on the company. Going back to my example of cosmetics, a lot of cosmetics companies outsource their manufacturing, so really it's managing a brand. They're really managing a brand, so an operations person, I think, could manage something like that remotely, or if it's a service, I think it could be managed remotely. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you're interviewing someone for a high-level position and you want them to be remote, you should ask them what their experience is with remote. Do they think they can be effective? Although a lot of employees are not feeling safe about going into a workplace and they want to work remotely, a lot of people do want to work in the workplace. So, you know, you kind of have to feel that out. I think the more flexible you can be, again, within reason, as an employer, you know, the better candidate you can find. If you can make things work with the best candidate, you know, and you have the added flexibility of someone working remotely, even if it's the time, you know, get yourself the best candidate, you know. So I really
sense.
Think it's a lot of being flexible and talking it through with the candidate.
So if someone is listening and they're considering, you know, I should talk to Amanda about maybe finding a good CFO or COO, or in our case, for our listeners, Amanda, a lot of people are really looking for that kind of leader so that the owner of the business can step aside a little bit and retire. Maybe they don't have someone strong internally. What are some of the first steps to working with you? Is it start with a phone call and an interview?
Yeah, so and what you just described is a ton of what we do. We love working with CEO owner operators that are either trying to move away from the business or even they're just overwhelmed and need additional help at a high level from some kind of a leader, whether that be operations, finance, et cetera. For any of your listeners, we're happy to do kind of an initial review of their interview and recruiting philosophy. So if they have anything set up, we're certainly happy to talk that through with them. If they don't, I'd be happy to give them some ideas of what would need to be done to identify a candidate like that. If they decide that's something that they don't want to do, because recruiting these days especially, it's quite time consuming. So if you know, if they decide they don't want to do the recruiting process on their own, we are happy to help. We go through, once we are retained on a search, we go through, you know, a multi-step kind of preparation process. But happy to have that kind of initial hour-long phone call to discuss what their strategy is and see if we can offer any advice.
Excellent. And again, the website is Solution Harbor, solutionharbor.com. And is that the best place for them to start to get to know you, Amanda, or should they, you know, get in touch with you another way?
No, the website's great. We're very active on LinkedIn as well. We put out a lot of useful content on LinkedIn and helpful tips for companies recruiting. So happy to get in touch with you any way you'd like.
Yeah, I would, you know, wholeheartedly recommend our listeners check out the website, solutionharbor.com, and then, you know, follow Amanda on LinkedIn. She comes up with some great, I saw a great video the other day, some great tips. Just, you know, keep her close by so that when you're really sincerely ready to find top talent at your business, that you know how to get in touch with her, because she's a terrific asset for you to have. And Amanda, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your tips with us. And again, things are always changing, so check in. Maybe we talk again in the next few months and just see how things are progressing with our crazy economy right now.
All right. That sounds great, Bill. I appreciate you having me so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for listening. It's been a pleasure to be with you all today, and we're going to bow out at this point. See you again on Exit Coach Radio next time.
Hey, everybody. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. One of the questions I get asked the most is, how do I grow the value of my business? I'm so busy working in it, I need to work on it. So we've created a special report for you on 10 tips to grow the value of your business. Just text the word DRIVERS to 44222 to get a special free report right to your inbox. That's DRIVERS to 44222. Text DRIVERS to 44222.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.
Hi, everyone.